I'll now take your questions.
What do you consider making key saving compulsory?
That's been discussed for some time. But I think the main reason, there was a number of reasons. One was the administrative complexity of doing so. Another reason is that with, when you've got such a high proportion of the workforce already in KiwiSaver, those who would be compelling would be either the quite low income people who have very genuine reasons to opt out of the system, or those who have decided to invest in their business or in other fields where they think they can do better. We, as I indicated, we are looking at what the savings working group called auto, auto enrollment, where you enroll everybody in it, and then if they opt out, they're allowed to. But I'm sure that debate will continue. We just couldn't see a good enough reason to move to compulsion. And in any case, our strong focus in this budget has been on getting the deficit under control. So we focus on that as a top priority.
Mr. Minister, you've offered $70,000 for one child under the change of conditions. $5 would be the payments. You're going to contribute nearly $15 for kids. So you need $20 a week for the soft in terms of cost of living. You have to pay people on those.
No, we're not hitting hard. I think what we're doing here is making a number of pretty reasonable adjustments over quite a long period of time to programs that deliver, you know, large amounts of cash into those families. So over the last couple of years, we've borrowed a large amount of money so that we could maintain, you know, working for families at a still rate, where people have the security of knowing and staying in place, maintain the contributions for KiwiSaver, and we simply now can't afford to continue to run those programs the way they were run. So we've made moderate changes that will come in over the next 3, 4, in fact 7 years in the case of working for families, that give people the time to adjust to a bit less ongoing. The one thing that would hurt all of those families is if we do not control the deficit with moderate, sensible decisions now, we would end up having to make harsh decisions that were forced on us later. And you only have to look at small, highly indebted countries around the world to see how harsh those decisions can be. So that's why we believe these are responsible and balanced decisions. Look, the ratings agencies will make up their own minds about the budget. We've had the same concerns as them, which is that as a small country with one of the highest levels of foreign debt in the world, we are vulnerable to unpredictable financial markets. That is why it was so important in this budget to get a track back to surplus quickly, to reduce our borrowing requirements by $10 billion and our weekly borrowing from $380 million a week down to $100 million a week. In my view, it warrants the ratings agencies looking at our rating favourably. We'll see what they think about it.
First of all, we're going to be changes to working for families. It says about 7,000 families are going to miss out on the year. Can you characterise those families, those households, for us, please?
Well, if families become ineligible, that means they will be currently getting quite small amounts of working for families. In fact, we'll be counting families who don't even know they're eligible. So they would be, they wouldn't be getting more than sort of $10 or $15 a week now. And if they become ineligible, it's because, depending on the number of children, they are on incomes of 60, 70, up to 100,000, and they just drop out the end of the system. Bearing in mind that every year there are thousands of families who lose their entitlements because their children turn 18 or leave school. So it'll be a few more.
Two questions on re-standing discrimination. The first is the changes that are out in 2018, and you're only saving $100 million a year to do so. So what the question first is, it actually worth doing to save such small amount of money? And are you concerned with the lift in the effective marginal rate of the 58%?
Okay, the answer to your first question is yes, we think it is worthwhile. We had a look at a whole range of options. I think it was important that given the very strong growth in this program, which has almost trebled in value over the last 5 years, that in order to give people a sense of security that it would stay, we needed to trim it enough that we could get back to surplus, because everyone knows the closer we are to surplus, the more likely that all that income support is secure. In terms of the marginal tax rates, these are one of the trade-offs in working for families, is that if you increase the marginal tax rate, you could reduce the incentive to work. Bear in mind, though, that a lot of these families have had decreases in their quite significant decreases in their marginal tax rates through the tax cuts package. For some families, some of those gains have been called back. But the marginal tax rates in a lot of cases will be lower, still lower than they were a couple of years ago, but a few cases higher. And on balance, given the importance of getting this $16.7 billion deficit under control, this is one of a number of moderate and reasonable changes across our main income support programs.
Just on the top of the new point, are they going to be able to New Zealand? There's 4 cents as the flow, and how much do you want to raise through the bond?
Well, you'd be best to talk to the DMO about the details, but it'll be the same eligibility as current Kiwi bonds. The advice from the market is that the returns on them are medium rather than highly attractive, and they'll test the market and see. We believe there'll be quite a bit of interest from the New Zealand public who want to support the rebuilding of Christchurch, and if they've got a choice between a bond that's helping Christchurch recover and leaving your money in the bank, some of them will choose the bond. The legislation will be, on the current timetable, will be passed within 5 or 6 weeks. And how relevant that is depends on the results of the contractual negotiations that are proceeding with different tenderers. And we would expect that we would have sufficient support from the coalition to pass that legislation. The question was whether I could say that the board bank decision is due. All I can say is shortly. It's in sight, the end is in sight, but it has been a long road.
Does this budget solve the structural deficit problem that you might have in the Reserve Bank?
The question was, does this budget solve the structural deficit problem that the IMF have outlined? Well, in the first place, just finding the structural deficits is a bit difficult. What it does do is solve the actual deficit problem that we have. If commodity prices collapse, then that sort of, you've got to think about a risk that you'll find that the deficit isn't going to come right. But we believe these decisions will go a significant part of the way to solving the structural deficit problem, because the savings we're making aren't dependent on the fluctuations in the economy. But if you can find that structural deficit, let us know and I can answer your question.
Return to this today, so in fact, there's 70,000 on the child, looking at those numbers. $70,000 on one child, you're going to lose $20 a week, and these companies are $20 a week worse off in terms of how much structural income you need. Now, that surely must have a significant impact on your ability to make a cost of living.
Okay, let's just think through what's happened with that family. If you go back 3 or 4 years, starting back, say, 2005, their working for families' payments have probably tripled in that time. They've had two rounds of tax cuts as well. And they've probably, in recent years, not had much in the way of increases in wages. The best prospect for them is not that they'll be $20 a week worse off, but that their wages and their household income is likely to rise. So in this budget here, they're forecasting rises in household incomes of 4% per year over the next 3 years. So what I would say to that family is that it's a strong and growing economy is the best assurance that they will be able to meet the cost of living. We have supported them strongly through a recession, borrowed a lot of money to do it, and these relatively moderate changes are going to allow us to continue to support them, and at the same time as they pick up wage increases. So I'd be pretty optimistic about their outlook, and I think they are pretty realistic about the extent to which the government can support them, which is with almost all of what they're currently getting, but trim back a bit.
Can I ask why the government decided to remove the years of CT exemption from KiwiSaver? And what would say to someone who's going to get 60k a year rounds from the then extra $80 if you want to take KiwiSaver in half? But only has a benefit of $2.62 of that, the rest goes to the government in that tax.
Well, there's two reasons for changing. One is the inherent unfairness of that exemption, which means a considerably larger subsidy for people on higher incomes and a significantly lesser subsidy for people on lower incomes. And then the second reason was we had a $16.7 billion deficit. We must bring that back to surplus, and that is one of a number of pretty moderate changes that enable us to do it. And it's less painful because that burden is spread between employers and their higher income employees. And they've got a couple of years to work out. A couple of years. They'll have to get on and work that out over the next 12 months. Okay, any other questions?
The last 3 years in budgets, 2-3%.
Why should we move these forecasts? Forecasts are forecasts. They're no better than educated guesses about where the economy is going to go. And ultimately, the forecasters don't decide where it goes. You do. The households, the businesses, the investors, the savers, the person going to work every day deciding whether they're going to work more overtime or not. We've got to keep the forecast doesn't create the economy, it just tries to guess where it's going. But I think if you look at what's actually happening, there's good reason to believe that we are in for a period of reasonable growth. One obvious one is the earthquake inflows. I mean, it does look like there could be up to, somewhere between 15 and 20 billion will be spent it will be spent. It's, the money's there, the cash is sitting in bank accounts in Switzerland and in Christchurch, and it's under contractual obligation, it will happen. I think the other thing underpinning it is the high export prices. For instance, our competitiveness against Australia is the best it's been in 20 or 30 years. And so we are going to see jobs and incomes that flow out of New Zealand businesses doing well in South Australia, when the exchange rate difference is as large as it's ever been. And I think a third reason to be positive is that New Zealanders have been remarkably resilient and pragmatic through this recession. And when you look at what they're doing about their debt and their savings, they're doing the kind of things that lay the platform for positive growth in the future. Now, it won't be growth in the form of rapid escalations in house prices or strong growth in credit card balances, but it will be economic growth based on investment in new jobs. So let's see whether the forecasters are right, but I'm backing the businesses and the households who have shown a pretty good understanding of what's needed to get through a recession, and that puts them in good shape to handle, take advantage of the growing economy. Ground doesn't actually settle. Yeah, well, that's there's a lot of challenges in Christchurch, and the less aftershocks there are, the easier it will be to deal with those challenges. We've made, from a practical point of view, we've made pretty large provision for government contribution to land remediation, if that's what's required. But I think everyone accepts no one controls the aftershocks, and it would be good if they tailed off. Just one more.
The Rugby World Cup over the last couple of months, the price of the rebuild has been jobs on a specific area. How is this budget creating jobs and investment into the productive and peaceful sectors? Because jobs are based primarily on
look, the contribution to the export sector is about the government creating the conditions where investment in that sector is attractive. And if you look across our program over the last couple of years, the government's made quite a significant policy shift in that direction. So we're sustaining a large program of infrastructure investment, which is all about lifting productivity in the export sector through creating an efficient transport network, and over the next couple of years, an ultra-fast broadband network. We've gone through a number of areas of regulation that have a direct impact on the export sector, and improved that regulation quite significantly. An unglamorous but vital job. For instance, significant changes to the Resource Management Act, among other things. If you go back to the last budget, over the next few years we're putting around $600 million extra into innovation and research. So that was budgeted in the last two budgets. It's still increasing through this budget. We haven't actually added any more. But that program continues. The tax change last year, which was the largest tax change at least in 25 years, fundamentally altered the incentives right through the economy to tax consumption more and less incentive to consume, higher effective tax rate on housing speculation, and reduced tax on income, savings and investment. So, and I could go on through other segments of the economy. Just the reform of the public sector is all about reducing the public sector's call on the capital and the people that we actually need to shift to the export sector. So we've had a longer term sustained program in which this budget is the next step, and of course there will be others. But I welcome any of the apparently transformative ideas that are out there that we're not picking up. Just let us know and we'll implement them, because we've got a good track record on implementing challenging and complex policy. Thank you very much.